To order the invocation today, Ms. Wilkins will do that for us, please.
Chair Gray, this morning I'm going to borrow from the Native American prayer for the Blackfoot peoples. Y'all will join me in prayer and meditation. Creator, hear us, for we are your children. Father, we thank you for all that you have given us. We thank you for the lessons that you have taught us and for the life that you have allowed us to lead. We thank you, Mother Earth, for your beauty and sustenance. We call upon the power of the universe to allow us happiness, prosperity, and love. We call upon the power of the universe for sacred direction, sacred protection, and sacred connection. We honor you, Creator, as we honor all things, seen and unseen, as we honor our ancestors, and as we honor ourselves.
Amen. Thank you. At this time, we'll have the oath of office to Mr. Reagan Gilley. Reagan, would you step up over here, please? And I'll meet you over there.
Reagan, welcome. Would you raise your right hand, please? And I will reopen you and you can take it. I solemnly swear that you will support the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the Commonwealth and be faithful and true to the Commonwealth of Kentucky so long as you continue a citizen thereof, and that you will faithfully execute to the best of your ability the office of member of the Regents of Western Kentucky University according to law.
I will.
And you further solemnly swear that since the adoption of the present Constitution, you, being a citizen of the state, have not fought a duel with deadly weapons within the state, nor out of it, nor has defense or accepted a challenge to fight a duel with deadly weapons, nor have you acted as second in carrying a challenge, nor aided or assisted any person, thus offending the help of God.
I will.
We have a tradition with members who take the oath of office to be a member of the Board of Regents that they receive official Board of Regents in hand. Other members who are officially sworn in to positions on the floor that I know each member received you treasure and value and it's something that's yours to keep, and I hope you wear it proudly today and for many, many years. Now you may be the shortest serving regent on record, but nevertheless it's no less significant. And it's something that we're proud of, and we hope you take equal pride in it as well. So we are honored that you are now part of this board and serve well.
Yeah. All right. Are you doing a special presentation?
Yes.
That's fine. I've got several. Well, why don't you go on and do the minutes first, and then I'll do. I've got a few announcements and things to do,
okay.
But let's go on and do the minutes,
right.
And we'll do that before we do committee reports.
Ms. Smith, would you do the roll call, please? Reagan Gilley?
Here.
Lois Gray?
Here.
Yvette Haskins?
Present.
Judy Hughes? Jim Johnson?
Present.
Jim Meyer?
Here.
Patricia Minter?
Here.
David Porter? Forrest Roberts?
Here.
Myself, Larry Zelfman. Thank you. We have approval of the amended minutes of October 31st, 2008. A motion to approve is in order.
I move that we approve the minutes.
Is there a second?
Second.
Are there comments or questions?
I have a comment. I never received a hard copy of the minutes. I got an email of them on Wednesday and said they'd be forthcoming, and they never came. And I just think we need to make sure they're sent out in a timely manner.
Absolutely. I apologize. We did overnight yours, so I'm not sure what may have happened. Do you, I have another hard copy here.
Okay. Okay. All right. Any comments or questions? Hearing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? It passed. Then we have the January 30th board meeting minutes to approve. A motion to approve is in order.
Moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Are there questions, comments, or corrections? Yes.
I have one correction. It's a small one.
Okay.
Page 17, the list of emeritus faculty. Doctors Bussey and Wicklander should be listed as being in the Potter College of Arts and Letters instead of the Gordon Ford College of Business. Unless they're going to get a salary adjustment to reflect that. Are you on the January minutes?
Yes,
I am.
Okay, there was another correction, and I think it's on page 8.
Okay.
I printed it out, and I don't have a hard copy, and I don't see that I brought my. Here, let me see. I think it was 8. Let me see. No. It's not 8.
You like what holds?
Yeah, let me see if I can.
It's the rest of them.
I had, like I said, I thought I printed that out, but I don't see what I did with it. Anyway, it was just, it's 18.
Okay. She has mine.
Okay. No. I hoped it was a typographical error. Otherwise, I misspoke terribly, but I can't find it now, and I don't see what I... that copy, so I'll just let it go. But it was, as I say, it was either I used a horrible grammatical error, which I don't think I did, or there was a mistake in the minute. So we'll continue to look for it. But
you've already sent those to your grammar teacher in the second
grade. I know, and I've already gotten a reprimand.
If it's simply an editorial error, you don't have to go through the approval process.
Oh, okay.
If it's just a minor editorial.
Okay. I'll find it.
We'll
point it out to you.
Are we all right
with
minor editorial typo?
With the corrections that have been stated. All right. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed? All right. The minutes are approved. Dr. Ransell?
A few announcements to make. First, I want to introduce Kevin Thomas Smiley. Kevin? There we are. Kevin is our newly elected SGA president and student regent, and that election was a couple of weeks ago, and he ran a very impressive campaign. Kevin's resume is in your supplemental packet. He majors in history and sociology, graduated from Danville High School in 2006, and is engaged not only in student government, but our Honors College and so many efforts across our campus. And he's a truly a wonderful example of what we talk about when we describe student engagement and meaningful participation, not only in the community at large, but certainly across our campus. So we will look forward to swearing Kevin in at our July meeting. I wanted you to meet him, and he's going to be at today's meeting to observe and take notes and be ready to go with his orientation for his first meeting in July. So, Kevin, congratulations. I want to give this is going to sound like a good news report. Whenever I go to the Rooster Booster in Owensboro, they always have the good news phone that rings. I don't have a phone that's going to ring, but
I can pretend.
But several announcements. You know, this is the time of year when things happen, and we all deal with enough news these days that is stressful. But let me give you a few things that continue to occur. This just occurred this past weekend. In fact, the news release went out on April 22, and this is in your packet. Our forensics team, again, won the National Forensics Association National Championship. And this is on the heels of the American Forensics Association Championship. And their national success continues to bring distinction to this institution. Just for whatever it's worth, the first 10 institutions in that competition WKU first, Creighton University second, U.S. Air Force Academy third, Missouri Southern fourth, Lafayette College fifth, Truman State University sixth, University of the Pacific seventh, Central Michigan University eighth, Ohio State University ninth, and Audubon College tenth. A broad range of large publics and small privates, and just a very impressive performance on the part of our forensics team, and just wanted you to be aware of the sustained high-level performance by that group. Secondly, I want to make sure this board is aware that the AACSB, the American Association of Colleges and Schools of Business, has accredited what's called a maintenance accreditation, reaccreditation, if you will, of our College of Business, Gordon Ford College of Business, and for the first time, a full accreditation for our Department of Accounting. And it's a very small number, I'm going to say 150 institutions that have both fully accredited in American higher education, and there are only, I believe it was four institutions across the globe that received accreditation for accounting for the first time this time. This is a huge statement for our College of Business, and I had the opportunity, Barbara and I both did last night, to be with all the faculty in our College of Business and congratulate them. And this is an important moment in the history of this institution and the Gordon Ford College of Business, and really a lot of hard work and accolades go to our College of Business for that achievement. I want to indicate that our WKU Public Radio continues to earn first place awards in the Associated Press competition. Nine different first place awards, more than any other institution in the Commonwealth. Really, really honored with the work, Dan Mylan, that our WKU Public Radio continues to achieve in competition with other public broadcasting services, and it continues to demonstrate that our public broadcasting networks continue to operate at a very high level. Our photojournalism program has won the Hearst Photojournalism Competition for the 17th time in 20 years of assessment of photojournalism programs in American higher education. And the William Randolph Hearst Foundation will be announcing their combined print photo broadcast journalism award shortly. But photojournalism, once again, is first in American higher education. And what a great tribute. Just whatever it's worth, we were followed in that competition by the University of Florida, University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, San Francisco State University, University of Missouri, Southern Illinois University, University of Kentucky, University of Minnesota, Ohio University, and Arizona State University in the top 10. Not that we're comparing, but whatever that's worth. And finally, another introduction and a comment or two, but Albert, step forward here, if you would, please. Albert and Wita. Albert and Wita Meyer are a great duo in our biodiversity programming, and you will recall at our last meeting we acknowledged an award from the Heritage Kentucky Heritage Land Conservation Fund Board, and it is in fact the inaugural Heritage Land Stewardship Award, and this is an important deal in Kentucky, and it's important that symbolically of recognizing institutions that are preserving our environment and performing responsible research and programming to ensure that our natural biodiversity heritage is preserved. And we won this first award, and it's quite an honor for our faculty, but for the institution. To remind you, these are the 800 acres that we've been provided by the Kentucky Heritage Land Trust Fund and to create the WKU Upper Green River Biological Preserve, and that's acreage that flows along the Green River watershed as it moves toward Mammoth Cave National Park. And all the work we're doing there with endangered species and plant and animals and It's really very impressive, and Albert and Wita are the brains, the energy, and the impetus behind a lot of the things we're doing, along with a lot of other faculty and students that ranges from biology department to the folklore department and some of our historic preservation efforts there. So we wanted to congratulate the two of you. If you're wondering, the revenue for this fund comes from the nature license plate that is sold in Kentucky, the state portion of unmined minerals tax, and environmental fines is what creates the funding for the Kentucky Heritage Land Conservation Fund. And this is the award that was actually presented to us, this framed, there you go, with a Kentucky warbler.
So.
There you go. Okay.
Who did the photograph? Is that who did the photograph? Whose is that?
Brown of the Kentucky Heritage Land.
Can you take a 10 minute?
You may.
Actually, since many of you 5 years ago, just about this time of year, were at the grand opening of the Biological Preserve. You remember kind of camping out in the open field. Wonderful burlap lane tables from the the property, the original 671 acres are labeled number one. So yeah, please take one. And we've purchased or acquired permanent management of a couple of areas nearby. The same fund has been doing that specifically for example, the water, so
that we're doing out there, please. And the graduate students in biology, twice a year, there's the cookout and the reception for everyone, to all our colleagues who've been involved. We really appreciate your support on behalf of the
at the preserve, a cookout?
At
the preserve?
At the preserve. I'll make
well, we've had one board outing there several years ago, and you may be the only person on the board who was on the board when we did that outing.
I was there.
Were you there? Okay.
That was when we had the car guy in the water.
That's right. Yes, we did. Yes, we did. Cornelius was horrified. So we'll come back.
Okay.
But thank you very much.
I think we went to Mammoth Cave. This was the next year.
Yeah.
Just briefly, you should be aware that our students are doing really well. There's the reason for that. We get the kids sitting
back. Congratulations. That's wonderful.
Great job.
Yeah.
Great job. Well done. Finally, I would certainly want to acknowledge the maestro among us. John Johnson directed the Bowling Green Western Symphony I had several events on campus last night, but I've heard great comments and appreciation of Jim's support of the Bowling Green Western Symphony, you and your employees, and what that means to this institution. And this was their final production in their centennial year. It's been a grand centennial celebration for the Bowling Green Western Symphony, and Jim Johnson was a guest conductor last night in their performance to a packed house. So,
my comment was, Mr. President, that it was their 100th year. I hope we didn't send them back 100 years.
I bet not. And finally, Judy and Marshall Hughes have a new child. I'm going to pass a picture of Harley around. I told her I would, even though she couldn't be here. So that's the new Hughes family member.
All right.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Dr. Ransell.
Good.
Action items. First item is to approval of naming of designated facilities. You see that on page 2. We have talked about this at our committee meeting. A motion to approve is in order.
Motion to approve.
Second?
Second.
Are there questions or comments? Hearing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. The next item is approval of the university's 2010 to 2016 six-year capital plan. And a motion to approve that is in order.
Motion to approve.
Second?
Second.
Any questions or comments?
Just wanted to make a comment that I do hope that we're going to hold off as much as we need to start Downing University Center Phase 3. I do hope we're going to hold off on that agency bond until things are a little bit more stable and we can afford the debt service in our budget.
Okay. All right, comments so noted. Any other comments or questions? Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, the same sign. 6.3 is approval to pursue state matching funds for endowed professorships. A motion to approve is in order.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Are there questions or comments? Hearing none, all in...
We do have one that is, and forgive me, because it just came together in an effort to get the matching money, and CP has asked for immediate responses to some matching money.
We're going to handle that separately, if that's all right? Or do you want it with this?
Whichever you prefer.
I have it as a separate, and I think our new agenda, it is listed separately, but
okay.
If you want to have it be inclusive, we need to make sure that's...
Either way, you can do it whichever way you like.
Let's do this, and then we'll handle it separately,
okay.
Since we
got it.
Our meeting agenda is set up for it to be this way, all right? All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. 6.4, if you see on your revised meeting agenda, has approval for the seeking of matching funds. It's a request to CTE to match the money, the funds that were given for the Susan Vitale Clinical Education Complex. You all have received a copy of that, I believe. Is there anyone that did not?
It's in here.
Okay. All right, you have that in your attachment today, too, as well. A motion to approve this. The deadline, I believe, is we have to have action taken by the board before May 1st for this to be
so moved.
Accepted. All right. Is there a second?
Second.
Are there questions? All in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Thank you. All right.
The report, huh?
That was quite painless, wasn't it? All right. Okay. We have some informational items that you have reviewed as well, capital construction project status, Mr. Osborne.
Yes, Madam Chair, contained in your booklet on pages 7, 8, 9 is our traditional outline of our update of our printed report for the capital construction projects that are currently in some status. It covers some $160 million in projects, and we're going to cover just some of the highlights with you this morning. I have with me this morning Brian Russell, who you, I think, have met before, who is the director of our Planning, Design, and Construction Department, and he will walk us through a few projects, and then I'll come back to you.
I'm going to get to the front of the slide here, sorry. These are some current projects that we're working on currently at Western Kentucky University, going with the science campus that we are working on, which is Snell Hall. We've got our Fikes Field replacement, Van Meter Hall. We have our Raymond Preston Center and classroom improvements, College of Education, parking lots, dining services, and campus, which is our Owensboro campus, and interior renovations of our bookstore. This is the Snell Hall project that is scheduled and will be completed for fall classes of 2009. This building is dedicated. It just has laboratories and classroom spaces. Some of the interior shots of that building, it's getting completed. These are some of the lab areas of the building. Some of the study lecture rooms. This space here is for the new facility for food service. It basically is a bake shop, coffee shop area. Just pictures of where that is going. This is a little rendition of that that's going to be completed this summer. That'll be part of that building as convenience to our faculty and staff and students. This slide here kind of indicates areas on campus and complements for convenience of our faculty, staff, and students, locations for dining. Top of the hill, we have our Science and Technology Hall, which is going to be the location for our math department. That's scheduled to be done for toward the end of the year this year for classes starting in spring 2010. This is the new replacement field that's completed, and I do invite everybody out for athletics. We have a red and white football game being held Saturday night at 6 o'clock. The Van Meter Hall project is moving ahead of schedule. We are planning on having this building completed end of the year. It's going to be a beautiful renovation project in addition to Western's campus. One of the nice features is that in this renovation project, we're putting in an ADA and outside access, and that's what you're seeing on the right-hand side of that photo. It's quite a structure, and it's very fascinating construction techniques that were done in 1910, 1911. This is our Preston expansion. It's about 12,000 square feet. That project is also scheduled to be completed toward the end of the year in December. And these are just some of the construction site photos that are happening. We also have put in this slide presentation that through the PDC office, we manage about 22 to 40 projects for just general campus classroom improvements, and just wanted to kind of show some of the things before and after how that progresses. John Osborne is going to take over.
If you parked near this building this morning, I'm sure you saw that this building is coming along. This, of course, is our College of Education building, the LEED certified building. Once completed, it will be three stories containing 120,000 square feet of office space and classrooms, of course, to house the College of Education. It is being constructed by A&K Construction out of Paducah, Kentucky, and the architects are Ross Tarrant Architects of Lexington. I've been showing you shots of the site in the past, and this is going to start taking shape. You can see the three levels of steel going up on the site at the corner of the building. This is some shots taken probably a week ago, so they're further along in what is revealed here. This part of the project will move right along. Also described in your handout materials today is a description of $4 million in parking improvements that will be conducted by the university, and we're going to be busy beavers this summer as it relates to parking. We have bids opening on the 29th, and with favorable bids, we will be starting construction immediately. In this particular shot,
has got a mind of its own today. In this particular shot, this is Adams Street, this is Kentucky Street, that's the CEC. This entire graveled area and this house that we, you may recall, we acquired will all be renovated into permanent parking this summer, and that will be part of, there'll be four phases. That's phase one. Phase two will be, in this case, this is the University Boulevard site. This is University Boulevard. This is Normal. We have an existing lot here. It will be extended to Normal Drive. Construction's already started on phase one of that project, and that's where we are at the present time. Weather has held us up this spring, but I think we're getting ready to get right at it. And this should complete by the start of school in fall. Another site that's going to do a lot of work this summer is known as the Pierce Ford Tower lot. This entire lot needs to be resurfaced, restriped, and upgraded, and it will be completed during the summer months as part of the $4 million, and it will be phase three. And the last and final phase of this project for this summer will be, this is 14th Street, that's Thompson North Wing, this is Chestnut. So what is known as the Chestnut Street lot used by the science campus is in very poor condition, and it too needs to be completely redone, restriped, and the potholes all filled in. I mean, it's in pretty sad shape. It will be done as well this summer.
Mr. Osborne, can I ask a question about that?
Certainly.
First question, this is all part of the $4 million that the board approved last July, right?
Correct.
All of these. Okay. Secondly, and, you know, full disclosure, this is my backyard. This is a block from my house. So are you going to keep, and I would urge you to do so, the very attractive retaining wall that borders 14th and Chestnut?
Absolutely.
Okay. Excellent.
Absolutely. In fact, you know,
there are a couple nice trees in that lot, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We always try to retain all the plant material and the rock walls that are involved, including the one at Normal Drive. We have some rock walls that's right in the middle of the lot, and so we're building a lot around a rock wall runs down the middle of it, and we're only taking out a portion of it for circulation. So, and then we're adding plant material and so forth. I would welcome you to look at the lot on University Boulevard, how it's been finished in terms of plant material and landscaping and curbing. That's the standard that we now aspire to achieve whenever we expand or add parking.
Okay. I had one more question. If you could go back to the, I guess you're calling it the Adams Street lot. It's the one that's adjacent to the SAE house. That's Adams Street lot, right?
Yes.
Okay. Can you show me on that diagram where, is there still a plan for three fraternity houses to go in there? And if so, where are they going to go in there?
Well, this is a little confusing.
This
is an actual photograph that we have condensed, and it's dated.
Okay.
In this particular case, the area you're talking about is actually here.
Okay.
And it was upgraded last summer and was opened this past fall. And if you'll remember, we left a section of parking along 14th that was anticipated to be for, this is 14th right here, 14th and Kentucky, the intersection. We left that undeveloped or restored because that was the intended area for the Greek Village.
Okay.
However, since that time, it's been decided that we've studied the different options for our College of Business. And it's our plan at this time, subject to approval and funding from the state as part of our capital plan, mm-hmm. that the College of Business would be on this site here once funding was secured. So that's going to impact our ability to keep the village there.
Okay.
Which is not likely.
Okay.
The Greek Village to be located at the original. But, you know, that's been a couple of years, and the fraternities that were planning to do something have not done anything for two or three years. Howard's in close communication with them. Two or three are now getting closer to doing something. But we don't know exactly where that site was shipped to. We're studying options right now. The Student Life Foundation is in the process of planning their expansion, which will be on the other side of Kentucky Street. John point out where that is, that row of, area right in there. That will probably be the next dimension of student housing. So Howard and I are exploring that with John and his staff. There will be a improvement of Greek housing. We just don't know exactly where or when at this point in time.
Okay. And what I was actually getting at was that so part of our $4 million that the board approved will eventually just be torn up to put the College of Business building or other buildings there.
Well, eventually. We hired an architectural firm, and they spent 6 months doing a site analysis. They narrowed it down to four sites, and they came back with lots of reasons, not the least of which were financial, as to where a College of Business should be sited. And even factoring in the cost to build that parking lot, if a building goes on that site, the cost for that site was still less than any of the other sites considered, factoring in the cost for that parking lot. But that's a right now $48 million project. I have no idea when the state will be in a position to do capital projects again, but my hunch is it'll be a while. So we're going to get, if we have anybody from the College of Business in here, but we're going to get 4 or 5 years of use minimum out of that parking lot. That is where the College of Business site selection process focused before we would be in a position to build a College of Business. And even then, it may be phased. We just don't know. But, in terms of capital projects and buildings, the renovation of the center wing of Thompson Complex is the first priority for state funding. The next priority is the College of Business, and we've got some in-ground electrical service and some other things that are on that list as well. So we just don't know when that's going to be funded. It's going to be a while. That parking lot's there. We've gotten a good year out of it this year. We'll get 4 or 5 more years minimum out of it. The schematics that we're doing for the College of Business will be put on hold until such time the state funding is forthcoming.
Okay, well.
And I would add that as a significant feature in that parking lot that was built as a large detention area that the architects have already indicated will contribute to the project and be retained. So the site's being analyzed for potential use to minimize the impact on the parking as well as utilize the detention area.
Environmental reasons, utility hookups, all that's right there. Any other site would have had significant costs, site preparation costs. And
I'm fine with that because I'm not the biggest fan of parking, as you know. I mean, I think we've got plenty of parking, and people are going to have to get used to moving out to the sites. But I am concerned in a budget where every dollar matters that we've really got to be mindful. If we're going to spend the money, then let's spend it where it's going to get used for many years. And I think that is going to be some concern to people as we deal with the consequences of these difficult times. And I'm sure you're mindful of that. Thank you.
Okay. I wanted to also update you on the status of a project that's being constructed in Owensboro today. I've asked Dr. Tice to join us and to walk us through a description of the progress that's been made in Owensboro related to the building and its programs. Dr. Tice.
Let me just kind of do a little history, a little reminder, history that I have learned in the last 8 or 9 months since I've joined the Owensboro campus, and that is 4 or 5 years ago, or perhaps longer than that, the Citizens Committee on Education, co-chaired by Forrest Roberts, commissioned a study about the educational level in Davis County in the Owensboro area. And they compared counties, the educational level of counties, the similarly populated counties throughout the Commonwealth of Kentucky. And in that study, they discovered that Davis County, the Owensboro area, including the Owensboro area, had the highest proportion of the population with an associate degree and the lowest with a bachelor's degree. And they realized that that really has had a negative impact on the economic development of that area and how important it was to increase the number of bachelor degree holders in that particular area. They've set a goal to increase, currently is about 15%, set a goal to increase that to 20%. The county is so committed to increasing the number of bachelor degree holders in that area that they have purchased property under the leadership, and I want to give Judge Reed Hare, the executive director of the Davis County, credit. They have purchased about 30 acres of land, and this is what you're seeing, the beginning, 30 acres of land that they have committed, dedicated to Western Kentucky University. And that 30 acres, they spent about $600,000 to purchase that land. They have a master plan that has been developed that would has the footprint of five buildings that can be built on that area. It's actually right across the street from the community college in Owensboro. We met several years ago on the community college campus. And we're all familiar with the capital projects, the vetoed projects. The Owensboro project was one of the first building, was one of the projects that was vetoed. So the county has stepped forward, and they are building this first building at their expense. We're talking about a 31,000 square foot facility. The they have done all the site work in kind with their labor, and the construction project, and it is the same architect that's doing the education building, this designing this particular project. So we are creating our first building in Owensboro for Western Kentucky. We have been city about 40 years. We've been in closets. We have been in class, junior high classrooms. We have been in every imaginable space. Now we're embedded in a community college. And so we really have developed a good relationship with OCT, the community college there. And what we will do is essentially create a four-year public institution in Owensboro in Davis County by the community college doing the first 2 years, and we then, the associate degree holders, will then transfer to WKU into this brand new facility, the first of five facilities. This building will have 18 classrooms. It will have faculty, staff, offices. All of our administration buildings will be in this particular building. So we will complete this facility in December. And in January, we plan to have classes that we will offer in this facility. We had this past year about 114 classes in the semester that we offered. I was going to share with you the spring enrollment data. I'll pass that around. We have just exceeded 1,000 in our enrollment this spring. That's part-time, full-time, and there are several methods of delivery. We have face-to-face classes, online classes. We work very closely with Tamala's staff. We have 6 IVS classrooms. In this new facility, we'll have 6 also. It will be set up state-of-the-art. It will allow us not only to receive, but also to broadcast classes from that location. And we'll have 2 remote stations that will allow us, depending on the need, to go to 8 particular IVS classrooms. So this is going to tremendously increase our capacity in this area. So we're really excited. Our goal, again, is to grow the number of bachelor degree holders in this area. So this is really going to give us, for the first time, a presence in Owensboro. There is a tremendous need. And I'll say that the academic affairs has been excellent in coming to Owensboro, trying to recruit students for us, trying to increase the knowledge of people in our area, the awareness that we're in Owensboro. The Potter College, Dean Lee brought his department heads up this past week, and we had a kind of a fair for those who are interested trying to grow the program. We're also working very closely not only with the Owensboro Community College, but we're also working closely with Madisonville and Henderson. I see all three of those as being feeders to this particular campus, as well as all of the associate degree holders that are in the area. And we're certainly seeing an increase in our enrollment. Part of it is driven by the economy right now. A lot of the manufacturing that we have in this area is being impacted negatively by the economy, and so those folks are coming back trying to get a bachelor's degree. They're looking at different areas. We have one of our promotional material that we give to all the community, to all three of the community colleges, to all the businesses and industries promoting our academic program, because our goal is to fill this building up as quickly as possible to utilize it. And we're confident that we're going to do that and put pressure on Dr. Ransdale to get the second building for us, because we think we need that. As we grow, we fully expect that this campus is going to grow, and we're going to be able to deliver our
second building that Gene references, he mentioned it a moment ago, is the $14 million project, phase two, phase one of that $24 million original project, I believe. Phase one was funded several years ago, and it is on the OCTC campus as a technical education building, a tech center for the Owensboro Community and Technical College, the latter portion of their mission with OCTC. Phase two is $14 million. It was one of the projects vetoed by Governor Fletcher. With all the veto projects, and we had a few others of those, we're trying to fight to get those back funded again. The current state of the economy is not helping that at all. But when that gets funded, the arrangement with the Kentucky Community and Technical College system is for an 8-6 split of that $14 million. $8 million to build a companion building to this building on this site, $6 million to OCTC to equip and continue to enhance the technical center that's currently being, or has just recently opened, I guess. Has that building opened?
It's been open for about a year and a half, 2 years now.
They recently opened on the OCTC campus. So right now, the second building is projected to be about a 34,000 square feet facility,
right,
I believe.
That's correct.
With an $8 million budget that will come from that phase two funding. Those projects, like the others that were vetoed that were state funded, are on what's called a contingency list, awaiting for the state's capacity to fund them. And they'll be the first things funded in theory, but they're built into the current year's budget. So if the next biennium comes, you know, we're going to have to continue to keep those front and center in Frankfort until it gets done. But the Owensboro community is working equally hard to keep that front and center in the minds of legislators.
Yeah, the leadership in the county is really promoting this second building, and so there is a lot of support in the Owensboro area to try to seek funding for the second building. The second building will have laboratories in it, whereas this building, for our classrooms, this is strictly traditional classroom kinds of space in this first particular building. And we will also have a bookstore, we will have a lab, we'll have a multipurpose room. So this facility will meet a lot of the needs of the community that we'll support.
Yeah. You've certainly done a wonderful job over there. I think your timing was, the view going over there was just incredible. And Forrest deserves such a huge thank you from all of us for all that she's done to make us all come about. But I noticed one little interesting statistic. I noticed that our enrollment over there is over 2-to-1 female. That's interesting from a gender standpoint. Well, and we only have 30 Afro-Americans in the program.
We have a high percentage of female because, and if you think about our enrollment or our, the market that we have in Owensboro, it's going to be families, it's going to be single parents, it's non-traditional students, and a high percentage of that's going to be female. So we'll see some of that change, I think, as the community colleges grow. And the Owensboro Community College is growing right now. They're strapped for space, so they're anxious for me to move out because they need more classroom space on campus. I met with the president yesterday, and Paula was, she's very interested in when I leave.
Keep in mind, these are upper division courses, so it's not like we can recruit freshmen into these programs, which does affect the demographics to some extent. We're only providing junior and senior upper division level courses, so that's a little different student recruitment context than, for example, our campus here or our Glasgow campus, which is all 4 years. So That affects the demographics a good bit. We can only take those that come to us with associate degrees in large measure. Is that fair?
Right, absolutely. You know, if they have lower divisional needs, then they're going to go to the community college. We cannot teach freshman and sophomore classes. So we're teaching the upper level and the master's. We've got 20 bachelor degree programs that we offer there, 21 master's degree programs that we offer, and we're growing, and you'll see in the brochure that we're offering new programs every year. The faculty, the deans are bringing new programs as we increase our capacity.
I would just like to say that the staff in Owensboro, the Western staff, is just ecstatic to have Gene there. More than once they've told me it's the best thing that ever happened to him, and he's doing a tremendous job not only in overseeing the building of this building, but also trying to grow Owensboro, which I think it's going to take off once this building is complete, because we will have that presence. People will realize, oh, I don't think it still soaks into a lot of people. They can go 4 years at a public school and get a baccalaureate degree. I don't think a lot of people still realize
you
that.
You talk about an economical degree. It is start at the community college, which is about half the tuition of the four-year institutions. You average that. I mean, it makes it very affordable to people who could not afford it otherwise. They simply cannot come to the traditional campuses.
He's done a great job.
Absolutely.
Great job.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gene.
All right. Next item.
Quick wrap up, only in that at each meeting I'm going to try to feature a project, and Dr. Tice featured Owensboro for you today. What I will do at subsequent meetings is try to feature a project, and in July I'm looking at doing a housing update with you because we've got so much going in our housing program. I've already spoke with Brian Cooster, and we're going to add him to the agenda as part of the report. The only last wrap up is that there's a couple of projects. One is the bookstore and the dining services addition that was added just recently at the community college, Western Community College, out on 31W, just a mile south of our main campus. Here's a shot of what the bookstore turned out to be. You saw the shot that it started out with, and we have a service area that shows that they're under construction. Here's the finished area, so we now have a full bookstore and dining services area added to the community college, and it's all complete and fully operational.
Is it a profit center? Does it make money? Or?
Oh, yes, sir.
It does.
It's part of our auxiliary services division.
Okay.
All right.
So that completes my report.
Thank you, Jim.
Madam Chair, thank you.
Kentucky Plan for Equal Opportunities, Dr. Miller.
What you have in your packet, pages 10 through 12, is a report card for WKU on its compliance with the 1997-2002 Kentucky Plan for Equal Opportunities. Just to refresh your memories, this plan, which was implemented and approved by CPE, identifies 8 objectives for each of the public institutions in the state of Kentucky. These objectives refer to admission enrollment, retention, and hiring of African-American students, faculty, and staff, both at the graduate and undergraduate levels. These eight criteria have the enforcement from CPE that institutions must comply with at least six of these eight objectives. They must satisfy at least six of these eight objectives. Otherwise, the institutions will no longer be eligible to offer any new degree programs. So, therefore, there is quite a bit of weight behind these objectives. Each year, each institution is issued a report card on their compliance with each of these objectives. For the year 2009, WKU has complied with or met six of the eight objectives. Those eight objectives are listed there for you on page 10, and you actually see the report card on pages 11 and 12. The pages 11 and 12 include the data upon which compliance decisions are made. Last year, for those of you that recall, WKU satisfied all eight of these objectives. This year, we were able to satisfy six of those eight objectives. There are two institutions, public institutions, four-year institutions in the state that did not comply with the objectives of the Kentucky plan. That is to say, they met less than six of the eight objectives. Those institutions, in order to offer new degree programs, must apply for a waiver in order to do so. That process is a very laborious one, and hopefully one that I don't wouldn't want us to have to go through. Morehead State University and Kentucky State University. Meeting these objectives is a total university commitment. It isn't something that is my responsibility, it's the responsibility of the faculty and the staff and the administration of the institution. The challenges that we're going to be facing in the future with respect to our ability to comply with these eight objectives is really going to center on retention of African-American students, both at the undergraduate and graduate levels. That is going to be a challenge as we go forward. And I think that challenge is going to be even more acute as we start looking at ways in which we are discussing access and admissions standards to Western Kentucky University. I'll be talking more with the Administrative Council about that as we go along. So there it is. If you have any questions about it, I thought we've done a reasonably good job of hiring. I think we can do a much better job, and we're looking at ways in which we can increase the pool of applicants of African American and other minorities for our faculty and administrative positions. We did not hire a single African American faculty member last year here at Western. We were the only institution that was not able to do so. I can report to you that we've made some progress for this coming year. So I hope we will have even better news when I report next year to this effect. But the figures are there. And so I'll be able to ask, answer any questions that you may have.
Richard, on page 10, you, bottom third of that page, the following documents outline these objectives by colleges.
Yes.
I don't think that's attached.
That's not attached here, Gary. Those documents were shared with the Council of Academic Deans, and I'll share them with the Administrative Council as well. We decided, in addition to looking at the report card that we get from CPE, to apply some of the same criteria looking at our compliance by college. Those data are available. They've been shared with the deans, and I'll be, again, I'll be sharing those with the Administrative Council as well.
This is a real basic question. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
When you say retention, do you mean retain the whole first year or they come back the next year?
It's a good question for us. These reports are based on cohorts. Mm-hmm. So, therefore, we're talking about, let's say, for example, students that were admitted fall of 08. the retention data was based on that cohort, whether or not they will return for the next academic year. Part of the problem that I see with this is that there are situations that exist that we have no control over in terms of how students are retained or they leave the institution. We may have two or three or four students who, for a variety of reasons, not necessarily academic, who leave the institution, yet they are still counted as part of that cohort when we have to stand before the objectives of the Kentucky plan.
But, I mean, that's what they want to know, though, how many leave the university for whatever reasons, right?
Yes.
I mean, that goes to the heart of what they're
looking for. Well, but the Kentucky plan doesn't take that into consideration. That's something for us to know. Oh. Obviously, if students are leaving...
Yeah. Well, there was that problem with all those kids that were dropped in January, and I think that is an issue that really needs to be looked at, is that how many of those kids, you know, it was a lack of communication and not anything else.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that really needs to be looked into.
You're right. Yeah. You're right. That's an issue that obviously we have to be concerned about. Jim?
Well, it's a small part of the overall picture. I'm assuming that the numbers in Owensboro there, and the only way you're going to overcome those numbers is get the community college to do more recruiting with minorities. Because if you're fed by the community college and they're not getting their
except
numbers,
the graduate program, which
it
is
adds to your challenges
it does.
Significantly.
Yeah, it does.
And excuse your numbers a little bit.
What
the other thing is, I would imagine that most schools are doing their best to recruit at the same time we are, the highly qualified.
Well, the demographics are obviously going to have an impact on whether or not institutions are going to be able to comply. The socioeconomic status is obviously related to the academic profiles of the students that apply. The readiness standards that are about ready to be imposed by CPE will have an impact on retention of students, as far as I'm concerned. And every institution, every public institution in Kentucky is trying to recruit, you know, the same number of students, and the demographics are changing. There are a fewer number of African-American students. There are greater numbers of Hispanic students. The Kentucky plan only refers to and relates to African-American students. And so there is concern on the part of a number of us institutional reps, as well as the Committee on Equal Opportunity, to make sure that African-American students in particular are not going to have to, we're not going to have to experience questions of access. Because there are many individuals who feel that even though we are in the process of revising the statewide diversity plan, the Kentucky plan is going to change. But the concern is it going to change to the extent that it's going to have a negative impact on accessibility to higher education by African-American students? Those are the issues and the questions that are being raised, and we're obviously having to deal with those.
That's absolutely right.
It's Kentucky resident African-American students.
That's correct.
I mean, we recruit a lot of students, African-American students, from outside Kentucky, which aren't included in these numbers. So this is simply a measure of Kentucky resident African-American students.
What's the other professional category? I mean, I know faculty and staff, but number 8 is other professional. Where do they? Who are they? Who are those people?
These are directors.
Aren't they? It just seems like they're all either executive, administrative, or staff.
Oh no, they make a distinction between those. Like directors of residence housing, those kinds of positions are under other professionals.
So that's a fairly small number.
Yeah, it is.
But it also speaks to the fact that they're really trying to get at the stratification. You know, are African Americans being closed out in the higher echelons of power? So it actually gives you a much fuller picture.
Actually, Larry, and now that I look at that, number 6 is executive, administrative, managerial. Other professionals would be your facilities people and others. And there's 436. We don't have 436 in some of those categories.
Right.
Those would be individuals below the director level.
Right.
Yes.
It might be in a staff position.
But it would include facilities, would it not?
Director of the department.
Well, the 472, keep in mind, is a combined total of both white and black. But
we have a category of employees not included in these numbers. Tom?
I'm not familiar with the categories that I know the correct thing, but other professional typically is professional staff, counselors, family advisors, coordinators of various kinds of things, managers, some directors maybe. But it's other, not department head level positions.
We've done a very good job within the last year, especially in John Osborne's area with facilities management. We're, in terms of hiring African-American employees here at the institution, I think we need to do a better job with our faculty and, of course, people that hold administrative and managerial staff positions as well. It's a challenge. We're all having to go through this. And again, as I say, every institution, I think the only institution this year that made all eight was Louisville, University of Louisville. But it doesn't take much of a swing. You could have a change in one or two people, and that will make a difference as to whether or not you've met an objective. And so it's you're right on the edge in a number of these objectives. The teeth is that if you don't meet them, you're not able to offer any new degree programs, and that's a major, major piece.
Isn't the competition for qualified faculty candidates tremendous? In other words, you're competing against a lot of universities in this country that are trying to achieve the same objective you are.
The thing that makes us more attractive...
Who are maybe in a better position to do the recruiting.
Yeah. I interview all of the prospective faculty members that we're searching for here at Western, and of the number, we don't have many African-American candidates that are at the interview stage, but we do have a few. And I can tell you, the thing that makes Western more attractive is the fact that we're not an R1 institution. We are primarily a teaching institution. We do have research and scholarship expectations on the part of our faculty, but that endears us to many, many individuals. They want that student engagement. They've done their homework. They've read our profiles, they've seen our website, and we are a very attractive institution.
Good.
We just need to do a better job of diversifying our applicant pools, going beyond the normal and traditional way of advertising faculty and staff positions, and just instead of just putting advertisements in the Chronicle or using some of the more traditional ways to be a bit more aggressive.
Dr. Miller, thank you very much.
This is just a tiny bit off topic, but I wonder for the board retreat in July, I mean, I realize this is reporting on this, what is within the parameters of the Kentucky plan, but I think it might be useful for the board to see what the work is being done on diversity, about hiring diverse faculty and staff into these director positions, because there is a lot going on, and I think it might help those on the board who don't work on campus to get a broader sense of what we're trying to do. It's not the easiest thing to do.
I'd be happy to do that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
My report starts on page 13, and just wanted to touch base with you on an update on some of our numbers, campaign and endowment related. On page 13, you'll see an endowment update. We continue to have our challenges, like all of our colleagues around the country. For the quarter, we were down about 4%, I guess, on the good news side, for those of you who follow the markets. Starting in about the 1st of March, when you saw a new low on the Dow at 6,500, we have had some recovery. And I think we feel fortunate that we're particularly well positioned in the WKU Foundation, because as I told you the last time, we have about $5 million in cash on the sidelines, had some additional dividend money on the sideline. So the foundation board made a decision last quarterly board meeting, to take a portion of that $5 million and start to, as we call it, stick our toe back in the water and we are in the process of dollar cost averaging about $1 million of that back into the market. We think that's a prudent strategy. We're looking at this summer, looking at an additional $2 million of possibly putting back that back to work. Without going into a great deal of detail, we are now looking at some alternative investments, so-called, both hedge funds and on the real estate side. If we get fully vested in our plan, which we're going to do very cautiously, we might be up to about 6% in alternative investments. Many of our the foundations around the country are up to 30, 40, 60% in alternatives. We're kind of slowly, as we grow, moving in that direction. Hopefully, as we turn the trend and start to grow again, as I should say. So again, that's kind of our strategy. We think it's a good one, and we think there's some great opportunities right now in, I think, buying on the low end, and that's a strategy that we think can have some success over the next few years. So any questions on the endowments? We also coordinate with the College Heights Foundation, and Alex Downing oversees the College Heights Foundation endowment, and we kind of match up our strategies as well. With that, I'll if there's and you can stop me if there's any questions along the way. I'll talk about the campaign totals. I'm very pleased with this number. Actually, we're closer to about $140 million on that number. We've had some very significant breakthroughs. Dr. Ransdell's been very involved with many of those discussions. We've had to be more creative with some real estate gifts, with some plan gifts, but very exciting announcements that we're going to have over the next few months. And what we're finding, and just briefly, I'll tell you what we're doing to re-gear for the second half of the campaign, because we're at about the midway point. We're hiring a new assistant director. We reorganized our office and changing some positions, some individuals who left. We're bringing in a new assistant director for plan giving, an area that we think has got very big upside for us, individuals who are looking at bequests, charitable remainder trust, lead trust, et cetera, gift annuities. That's somebody who's going to be on board this summer. We're also utilizing all the matching money out there. That's creating a little bit of a sense of urgency. You already approved about half of our matching money. We still have about $1 million left with that, and then we have some SkyTeach money available also for scholarships. So matching money is very enticing to our donors. We also have a big emphasis on stewardship. That's something in talking with colleagues around the country, it's the right thing to do anyway, is to thank donors, but it's also very effective in a downturn market. One good example of this is our scholarship dinner that we have in October. Some of you have attended that. It's great event where we match up scholarship donors with scholarship recipients. And there's something magical that happens when you put those folks together and they get to meet their students. We pay for that dinner. It's a nice event. It's an opportunity for us to say thank you. But the net result of that is we get a tremendous increase in interest in adding to scholarships. And it's a wonderful connection that occurs. So we are working hard. We're doing something tomorrow morning with our Cupola Society members, people who've given consecutively. So we're busy saying thank you. Another one, just to wrap. Well, actually, two quick things to wrap up. Being more creative, we've had to look at in-waiting some gifts for individuals who don't feel quite comfortable with the market losses. Saying, you know, well, we can give more in year 4 or 5, or we'll project out an in-weighted gift. We're looking at more different real estate commitments through charitable remainder trusts and other things. So we're having to be more creative with that. And then finally, I would tell you, we hold our staff accountable. Our staff has a goal of at least 18 to 22 visits a month, and they have to achieve a goal of almost 3 proposal submissions a month, about 30 a year. And that's very ambitious if you look at that nationally. So that's something that we really focus on. At the end of the day, the dollars will take care of themselves if you measure the right things, and that's what we're doing. So just wanted to give you a little update. While we're excited about the campaign number, the next page on 15 talks about cash flow. And I will tell you, since Dr. Ransdell took office, our cash flow has increased every year except for one. We had one downturn year, and I can tell you that in lieu of a miracle in the final quarter, we're probably going to have our second downturn year.
Part of that is, as I mentioned to you before, we had a $2.5 million gift at the beginning of last year. That doesn't account for all the differential in this last quarter. But the other part is we've had some slippage in our annual fund. Some folks, particularly when gas prices were at $4 a gallon, and then with the market, you know, they just didn't make their commitment this year. So we're really working hard on trying to finalize things with our present circle, really pushing on that. And on the next page, you'll see that, really the backbone of our cash. One example of what we're trying to do with that is there's something called, we call, which everybody has their jargon, we call them libunts, individuals who gave last year, but unfortunately not this. So we're working hard on our libunts right now by having Lee Robertson and others in our office go out and thank people for their past support and trying to get them to finalize their gifts for this year. So that's an example of what we're trying to do to get over our total for last year. We have a goal of about 2,450 for President Circle, which we're working hard to achieve in the last quarter. And then on the last page, I include just some good news, some recent gifts for your edification, and just highlight a couple of them on page 17. Sam Dunaway, an individual who Dr. Ransdell have gotten to know in Fordsville, Kentucky, has now given about $1.3 million in scholarships. He's an amazing individual, has the biggest forestry program in the country, is not a WKU graduate. In fact, I'm not sure if he's a high school graduate, but he is a very intelligent, bright business person who's done an incredible thing for us by providing these scholarships, and he continues to support scholarships we're bringing. Next week, Dr. Ransdell and I are going up to Fordsville, which if you've never been there, it's a wonderful place to go. You don't have to ask where to have lunch because there's only one place to have lunch, but it's a great place, and we're taking his students up there to meet with him. And then the last one on the list, the Laura Goad Turner Foundation Sky Teach Scholarships. We announced those about 6 weeks ago in Scottsville. A wonderful, magnificent gift from the Turners, who have supported us in a variety of ways. And that's a combination of scholarships for Sky Teach individuals who are going to study science and math and then go back and teach in the schools in Scottsville, as well as scholarships for individuals from Scottsville coming to WKU. So we're obviously very excited about that one. The one that's not on here is the one you voted on earlier, the $375,000 from the Special Needs Trust. That's part of over $2 million they've now given to the CEC. So we're very proud and appreciative of that gift as well. One thing I will do in the July report, and I failed to do this time, I apologize, is to give you some alumni activity. And I can tell you we're doing hundreds of events over the last quarter, so I won't get into that today, but I will give you a wrap-up report on that in July.
Thank you, Tom.
Yes.
Yeah, that was my question about the alumni. But do you find that people that were given at one level, if they can't give at that level, will they drop down a level or just not give it all?
That's a great question. We certainly try that. And, in fact, I had a conversation with a donor this morning that told them the proposal we gave them at $500,000 was not a yes or no answer. So we try to work on that. You don't want to negotiate against yourself up front, but at the same time give people some flexibility. So we are working on both the number amount. Our first option is to push out the years. That's what we prefer to do because we'd rather have the higher dollar amount. But yes, we are asking either through the annual fund, if it's $100, if they can't do $100, you know, could they do $75 or $50? And at the other end, at the $1 million level, we're being flexible on how we structure those gifts as well. That's a good question.
And how aggressive is the alumni to get the alumni to give, you know, the alumni association to get the alumni involved in giving? And once you get them giving, do you keep them? I mean, do they stay on?
That's a very good question also. The alumni, the statistics show if you can get people to give three times consecutively, you're about 80% there to continuing them as a lifelong giver. So we spend a lot of money and time and effort getting that first gift. And it's expensive. It's expensive to raise the first gift, but that's our focus. And a lot of first time, it can be $25, it can be $50, but our goal is to get them to repeat giving. So the annual fund and the alumni office are work together on that. We have both solicitations for annual fund lifetime memberships as well as their annual fund gift to the university. So that's a big emphasis point for us. It doesn't really pay off from dollars standpoint, but it does pay off long term in getting them to continue to give and stay connected.
Thank you, Tom, very much.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure. I appreciate your work. Robin? Taylor, Ms. Taylor.
Bob Cooper's going to pass out for you a year report. I would not characterize this as complete in terms of everything that's out there about WKU. There are certainly several things on athletics and other things that are not included in this report, a number of things from weekly newspapers and other things around our region that are probably not included here either. This is really just intended to be a snapshot for you of perhaps some of our more significant news items. I did want to, just very quickly, I want to introduce to you Sean Braden. Sean is our new marketing and communications director. Sean comes to us from Raleigh, North Carolina. She's actually a WKU graduate. We found and plucked her out of Raleigh and brought her back to Kentucky. She's from Owensboro Forest, and her parents still live there, in fact, right down from the new side of our campus there. Sean has about 25 years experience in marketing. She, as I said, has been in Greater Raleigh Area Convention and Visitors Bureau and has served as a consultant. She's worked in Nashville in similar roles. She's worked in Lexington. She worked for the Council of State Government, the Council of State Government as well. You met Jennifer Brewa, those of you who were at the committee meetings a little earlier. Jennifer was hired on as our director of marketing, as our director of government and community relations. And so this sort of rounds out my leadership team in public affairs. Sean Braden is director of marketing communications. Bob Skipper, whom you know, is director of media relations. Jeff Younglove as director of campus and community events. Lucinda Anderson is director of ceremonies and special events. And Tom Meacham is director of publications. And most of those have been here for a while. Sean is, of course, new, and so is Jennifer. On to the media report. A couple of things in here that you can see at the beginning are just ongoing relations that we have. WBKO, this is not included in here, as most of you know who are from this region, runs a weekly View from the Hill that we produce. It's produced by Amy Bingham. WNKY, which is the NBC station here, they have begun running a 30-minute morning news program, and in that every week they have an interview segment that's focused on WKU. You can see those who've been included thus far. And we also have WNKY in that program also airs once a week another Focus on the Hill that they do internally, and so they're up here. We have two segments a week on their morning show. The media staff is out and visiting with media within the region, across the state, and you can see a few of those. Tamala will like to see that we've got something going on in Katy's there with the radio station. What we're trying to do is produce our audio versions of our View from the Hill and some other stories that we're producing here. We're trying to get those out into regional media as well. Couple of the highlights, the energy shutdown was, of course, something that we had a lot of coverage on, and the Teacher Hall of Fame, a lot of coverage on that. That was when Frankfurt back in the session, and then we had, of course, Governor Beshear here to announce our new energy policy and had a lot of coverage on that. A number of things on the MesoNet. The MesoNet is a program that is federally funded where we are establishing weather monitoring stations across the state. When we're complete, we'll have 100 of those across Kentucky, and those are partnerships with local government and community leaders, business people, farmers, and others. Blaine, I know I haven't covered it all, but that's a great program. And they're doing a lot with local media. They've got some efforts with Lexington Media here in Bowling Green as well, where the weather reports are now using MesoNet data and publicizing that as the source of their data. So that's been a great program for us as well. And now I'm going to turn it over to Bob Skipper, who is going to show you a couple things very briefly on what we're doing in social media. One of the things that we know is that individuals, particularly young people, do not go get their news in the traditional places that maybe some of us get our news. And so we are trying to become the news source for many people. And in getting them on Facebook and Twitter and places where they are currently seeking news and information and trying to be that provider. So, Bob?
Thank you. Like Robin said, we're trying to provide news. A lot of people, it's not just the young people nowadays, are not getting their information from traditional sources. So we're trying to become a provider of some of this news, especially the good news about the university. So what we redesigned our news page. As a part of that, we tied that in with our venture into the social media. See, here on our news page, we're using more photographs, we're incorporating more video and multimedia, and that's kind of our traditional audience. Now, we have gone on to create a Facebook page for our WKU News.
And Twitter, too.
What this allows us to do is put out little snippets that are tied back to our news blog or to our news page and give links, and then people are allowed to comment on it. They can click and follow the whole story. This has grown tremendously. We launched this right before the NCAA tournament. Good timing, because there was a lot of interest in WKU, especially after the win over Illinois. In that short amount of time, we've already grown to more than 3,700 fans. And these are people who have sought us out and taken the step to become a fan of our page. Now they receive our updates. And not only do they get our updates, our updates will appear on their Facebook pages, and anyone who is a friend of theirs will see these as well. So it has potential to grow tremendously over the next few months. We can incorporate video on the Facebook page. This has to do with the Kelly Autism Project that has expanded into Owensboro. This was last night's View from the Hill on WBKO. Now we have the video version available through YouTube and through our Facebook page. And the other new venture is in what's called Twitter, another social networking site. Twitter allows you to it's for people to put out a quick little thing to their friends to tell them what they're doing. We're using it again to highlight news. Late yesterday afternoon, we found out that Bowling Green's mayor was going to be interviewed on the news hour on PBS. Our PBS affiliate, WKYU Television, was producing the audio or the video for that. So we were able to tweet that, and then our followers, which now number 96, span of just a few weeks, got that information quickly. Many of them get it on mobile devices, and again, they can click on a link and go back and find out more information about that. And as I mentioned before, we offer a video now on YouTube, and it's not just the View from the Hill, it's other video from news conferences, things that are just produced around the campus. Our university photographer, Clint Lewis, is offering many of his photographs on Flickr, which is just a photo hosting website. So when we send out a news release, it might contain one photograph, then there's a link to the Flickr website, which there may be 20 or 30 more. Commencement's a great example of that. There may be a whole album of photographs from Commencement that people can scroll through and see. Also, we're still providing our daily e-newsletter at WKU. I think many of the board members get that now. And we've redesigned that recondly to condense it. More links, fewer words, and makes it easier to see on mobile devices, and our subscribers can still click on the link and follow and see the whole story, and we're up to about 1,000 subscribers on that.
And Bob's staff sends out daily and weekly blasts of news and information to media, and is that what you're talking about that has 1,000?
Yeah, that's the one that's sent out every morning.
Okay. And whenever I go out and visit with media, they tell me that they get those and how much they appreciate getting that information. So we are in a number of places. We are creating some models and some planning that I think we will integrate a great deal in our marketing efforts, so that news and marketing are going to be, I guess, somewhat combined to some extent. But anyway, we'll be back with you on some of those plans. I just wanted to give you an idea of how we are moving forward. And if you have a Facebook page, or if you don't, sign up to Facebook and be a fan of WKU.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Robin.
Mr. Irons, internal auditor report, please.
Morning. Good morning, Irons. I come to you once a year to give my annual report. This year's report's a little bit different in that it's an 18-month report. Time lag was getting a little too much, so I wanted to get caught up. It's better to give you information on a more timely basis, so that's what I'm trying to do here. Again, it's just a report. It tries to highlight some of the areas that we've looked at, some of the activities we've been involved in, some of the things we found, and some of the changes that have been made as a result of some of our reviews and such. On pages 18 through 28, I believe, in your packet. I don't know if you had it.
Yeah. A couple of things. First of all, I know in the past, and I meant to pull an old one out, and I didn't, so I may be wrong on this, but it's my understanding that you didn't gave a follow. There was a follow-up as to whether or not the problems have been corrected. Is that, am I remembering correctly?
On some, I think there might be one or two things that we mentioned in here in regard to that, but I can't, if you would like me to go back and look at what was reported the last time,
yeah.
I can do that. I haven't done that.
Well, I'm just wondering, like the bookstore change fund, it seems like right. A recommendation, but it hadn't been changed. So
right.
Really
I think it, and when this report was written, it had not been, but it's my understanding that they are making changes in it or already have made changes.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it might be good to get an update. And also, I was curious about it. It seemed like there were some problems in the psychology department, and I don't know if there's been...
Is that...
some of these, it looked like there were problems, but there weren't disciplinary problems. And it just, I guess my question is whether
right.
or not steps have been taken to make sure these problems don't continue.
Right. Well, I'm not... There were actually a couple things that you could maybe tie back to that, not no. maybe just by chance, but... there were some, and again, I don't know particularly which issue you're referring.
Well, there was one, the graduate student's compensation,
okay,
and I
right.
also realized there had been another problem about, I'll have to go back and find it, but one that had come
yeah,
from
I think then the graduate student thing, of course, I think it indicated that was corrected, and I believe that that won't be happening anymore. And I'm not sure which of
I thought, I mean, I marked it, but I didn't mark it as psychological. But there was another one that came
okay.
from that.
Let me just say this, and I mean...
the faculty compensation on page 19, that was also...
Right, that was a situation where a payroll form, two payroll forms were generated from different offices to do the same thing. And so, again, I don't know... I'm not sure how that sort of thing can be stopped. I mean, one hand didn't know what the other hand was doing, essentially, is what happened there. So but we did become aware of it, and that was.
Yeah, and I guess my question, though, is there anything that can be done to make sure that both hands do know what they're doing so that they can...
Yeah, I'm not sure. I really would need to think about that. And I do know that issue has come up. It would be difficult. It would be difficult to put something in place. Unless there was possibly some determination made that those types of payroll forms would only be generated from certain areas. Like, I think in this particular case, one of the forms was generated from maybe the dean's area, and one was generated from the department level. So maybe what needs to happen there is it needs to be one or the other. Maybe the department level should be the one who starts it, because I think the dean is going to have to sign off on it anyhow. So... that might be something to address that issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like it would go through one person if you're asking for, you know, a payroll action instead of...
Are there other comments or questions?
Yes.
Mr. Irons, I was regarding the NCAA football attendance requirements. I wondered if you could give us some follow-up on that, and Dr. Seelig is here as well, if he had anything to contribute.
Well, I believe the report, what I said in it pretty much summarizes it. At the time we did the report, this was, by the way, the first year that we've ever been required to meet any kind of attendance requirements, and also the first year that anyone at the institution, let alone internal audit, was involved in trying to figure out what we were supposed to do. So we had some new reports we were dealing with, some new issues, and so, and as often happens, we were at a time crunch trying to get things done by a certain day. So, but based upon our conversations with people at the Sunbelt conference, and also Sunbelt Conference main office, and then also with some officials with the NCAA, we determined that we were able to count or use certain certain numbers, certain revenues in achieving our count, and it's indicated on the summary. Using what they said we could use, we were able to meet our, we just didn't meet our attendance levels for that year, 2007, the 2007 football season. And then, of course, that was we actually did that work back in, like, what, February of 08. And of course, now, we're back, this is about the same time again in 09. We've already done the 2008 attendance numbers, and there was no problem this year at all. So it was kind of, like I said, it was kind of rough for various reasons, but again, we were using some, one of the things we were using was, we were told we could use was receivables, where people had been given tickets and been billed for the tickets.
I was about to say, is it comping tickets?
Yeah.
To put it differently.
No, it's not comp tickets. No, this is where people had been given, I say given tickets, they had received the tickets, they'd been billed for the tickets, but at the time we did this report, not this report, but the original report that I'm referring to here, they hadn't paid yet, so it was an outstanding receivable that was due to the university. So, and we were told we could use those, and we did. And then as we were doing our work with the 2008 football season, we kind of revisited some of that, and we found that some of those receivables had never been collected, had never been paid. So that's what I'm referring to in there. But again, in the more recent football season, 2008, which again, we did the work on that as well, and there was no problem with meeting the minimum requirements in 2008.
Okay. Two things we've done. One, we have a new ticket manager.
Okay.
And two, we have a new ticket system. It's a new system that will catch everything of when accounts are paid, which ones are not, and it helps us stay on task a little bit better. So this was actually a good finding and a great time. This was in 07, our first year of transition. But like Warren said, in 08, there were no accounts payable. Everything was paid in full. So everything went very well last year, and we anticipate the same thing in 09 and going forward.
Good. Excellent.
Yes, ma'am.
I think a good example of what I was talking about earlier is this trip to the Galapagos Islands, in which it says the faculty members should be asked to reimburse the university. Well, the question is, will they be asked and will they reimburse? And also one more thing is that I know several years ago there was a problem with study abroad programs and the funding, and I thought there were going to be new procedures implemented to take care of those problems.
And I think there have been, I can't say it's corrected every problem, but there have been new things that were put in place. This is a little bit different in this situation because this was actually a program that wasn't actually financed through the university structure. It was financed through the Alumni Association, which is a little bit different. Mm-hmm. But one of our findings in that is that really, because it was a credit course, students were getting credit for doing this, that in the future that doesn't need to be through the foundation or the Alumni Association, it needs to be through the university. So I think we've got that straightened out. As far as these particular individuals involved in this, we actually have met with one of the individuals here very recently, in the past week, maybe spurred by this report, actually. But and we're looking at some additional information he brought forward. So that's still kind of an open issue.
And I believe they actually have to get paid.
Okay.
Some
people
in the way the money flowed
to
the
foundation
account, and then got
built
against it.
No, they
didn't. Spouses
didn't.
That's exact. I think that kind of follow up would be extremely helpful going forward.
Anybody else have a question or a comment?
Well, I commend Warren. I mean, it is a complex, massive job with a $330 million budget, hundreds of departmental accounts, dozens of different employee categories, dozens of types of revenues that fund different types of personnel, transactions of untold differences, and he's got a staff of a half
Yes.
that works with him, and it's institutions our size have a significantly larger auditing staff, but we're trying to hold our administrative infrastructure to a minimum, and it's a huge job, and it's a thankless job. So Warren does it well, and he's diligent, and covers a lot of ground.
Well, I'm just curious if this is one of those things that's, you know, whatever those phrases about pound foolish or penny wise, that if we're losing more money through cracks in the system by not having more staff, and if you paid for the staff, if it wouldn't come out maybe at least even, because he talks about the time frame for just a half an assistant to do something like that.
Well,
seems like,
yeah,
that's
enough. Let me say this too. I mean, we're funded for a complete another person, okay? Mm-hmm. And I had an individual, very capable, Julie Hodgkins, and she, a couple of years back or so, she took maternity leave, and so I wanted to keep her on staff because she's such an excellent person. So I've kept her on part-time, and I've kind of dropped the ball somewhat because I really need to fill the rest of that, either get another part-time or make some other change there. So we are funded for two full-time positions.
In theory, you're correct, but for your theory to hold up, you'd have to take some money from one or more of those units to direct it toward Warren's operation, and none of those units, if they create efficiencies by things he finds, are going to want to give up the revenue to transfer from their budget to his budget to make the theory come to fruition in actuality.
Yeah, but he doesn't work on commission, so I think
that's the fault.
Just find the money.
We need him on Wall Street.
We'll take a recess now, and I ask you to be back quickly so that we can continue on and get to the financial and budget section. So take a quick break.
Don't get to-